Hello, my name's Mike Talty. I work for Microsoft in the UK. And this is one of a number of short videos around a new framework that's coming as part of Silverlight 4 and also as part of .NET 4, the full .NET framework, that's called the Managed Extensibility Framework, or MEF for short. So it's coming in both Silverlight and .NET 4. I'm going to look at it here in the realms of Silverlight applications. And in a nutshell, what this framework is about is enabling you to sort of compose a Silverlight application out of a number of very loosely coupled pieces that can use different mechanisms for discovering each other at runtime in order to come together and form an application. If that sounds a little bit abstract, then perhaps to make it more concrete, think of plug-in architectures. Think of something like Visual Studio, which has the capability to plug in lots of different designers and build engines and those kinds of things. Or think of something like Outlook, where you can write add-ins yourself using .NET for Outlook and plug them into the core application. And MEF enables those kinds of scenarios if you want to think of it in a more concrete way. Now, just to provide a few pointers before we get started, if you want to follow along and you want to know how to get started with Silverlight 4 and MEF, then the first thing you need to do is download Visual Studio 2010. The Beta 2 is the build I'm using here. You can get that from msdnmicrosoft.com/vstudio. That's all you need. You don't need the other bits in order to find the download for Beta 2. That will get you Visual Studio 2010. You would then also want the pieces for Silverlight 4 development in Visual Studio 2010 Beta 2. Best place to go to get those is to pop over to silverlight.net, pop over to Get Started over here, and then down on the right-hand side, you will find a link to go and get everything for the Silverlight 4 Beta. And MEF is part of that Silverlight 4 Beta. So follow the instructions there. You'll get the tools and the SDK in order to install the Silverlight 4 development environment bits into Visual Studio 2010 Beta 2. It's worth saying as well that MEF, there's also a version of it on CodePlex for .NET 3.5 and Silverlight 3. So if you pop over to mef.codeplex.com, you can find the previews of MEF on there to play with against .NET 3.5. That's the existing .NET framework, and Silverlight 3. That's the existing released version of Silverlight. Finally, if you're trying to find more of these videos, if you pop over to Channel 9, this is where I'll put the videos. If you go to channel9.msdn.com/niners/mtalty, that's me, and you'll find these videos here as and when they're published. And if you're trying to find me in any way, you can pop over to my website, which is just at mtalty.com, and then you'll find my blog. And finally, if you want to get hold of me via email, you can just mail me at mike.talty@microsoft.com. Okay, so with all that introductory stuff said, let's get started and take a bit of a look at Managed Extensibility Framework. Okay, so welcome to video number 2. This one follows on from what we did in the first video, so I recommend that if you haven't seen it, take a look at the first video and have a look at what was in there, because this is going to follow straight on from that. And we did a lot of stuff in the first video that we didn't explain. We're going to start trying to explain some of that and show you some more of the options that are available. The first thing I want to do here in this particular video is talk a little bit more about some of the options that we can control using these export and import attributes that we saw when we were working with video 1. So in video 1 we had some types like a word processor and a text engine and so on, and we applied these attributes to them. What I want to do here is take those and explore those a little bit further. So let's shut this down and go back to Visual Studio. Okay, so I'm in the same solution that we started in video 1, and we've got our idea of a text engine that exports itself. We have a word processor class which imports a text engine and exports itself. And we have a piece of code behind our main XAML UI which imports a word processor. And then in our constructor we're calling partInitializerSatisfy imports. That comes from MEF on this instance of this type, and it will go ahead and plug in the word processor, and into the word processor it plug in the text engine. And that's what we built in video 1. Okay, so in the first instance, let's explore these import and export attributes a little bit. And let's start off by talking about where we can use them. So at the moment, our word processor is importing its text engine onto a public property. And it's important to say it needs to be public because of the way reflection works in Silverlight. It will need to be public. It could be a field, though, instead of a property. So if we replace this with a field, which I think we can just do like that, and pop back to our breakpoint, let's just make sure that Meph is still able to compose things onto that field rather than that property. Click our button and get our breakpoint. And we can see that we've still got a valid text engine there within our word processor. So composing onto a field is fine. Let's stop debugging. Let's go back to our word processor. And let's make this back into a property again. Generally, we're going to prefer properties rather than fields, I think. We could also import this at construction time. So if we didn't want to import this way, we could lose the attribute from the property, add a constructor. If we say that this constructor that we've got here is an importing constructor, and then just rerun, we'll go and put our text engine to be passed to us at this point, and we'll just set, and let's put a breakpoint on that so that we can see how that word processing instance is being constructed. And you'll see that we're being passed a text engine, and that's coming to us from Meph, so we can also import onto the constructor. If there were certain properties here that you wanted to import and certain others that you didn't, you can again use the import attribute here on the parameters as well. That's a perfectly fine thing to do, so you can do that there too. Let's get rid of that for a minute and go back to importing to a public property. And so let's have a look at this on the export side of things. If we switch over to the text engine, which is doing the exporting, at the moment we're just exporting this type, this text engine class. We could go via different routes. We can also use this attribute in some other places. So for instance, if we take this away and we write another class, let's call this one text engine creator or something like that, we could put a property on there. So let's say public text engine, and we'll just add a property called engine perhaps. And in the getter, well, we could do what we want, but let's just return a new text engine for simplicity. And if we go ahead and export this property rather than exporting a type, which is what we were doing a moment ago, and maybe we take the constructor, put a breakpoint on that, and maybe put a breakpoint on this getter here, we'll see that Meph is prepared to reach in and create one of these for us in order to get to this property here, which we said we want to have exported. And if we run round, we can see it being exported. And if we click our button, once again, we can see that the word processor does indeed get a text engine. So that was a different use of the export attribute, where we're actually assigning it onto a property in this case. And again, of course, we could assign it to a field as well. If we wanted to make this a field, let me just make it a field like that. And from here, we could simply say engine equals a new text engine and assign the field before Meph asks for it. And at that point, again, exporting from a field is probably perhaps less common, but still the word processor will get populated with a text engine, so we can export from a field as well. And if we pop back over to our text engine, we can also export on methods as well. So instead of exporting this field here, which returns a text engine, let's export a method. We can export any method we like. But let's add a method onto here, which we'll export. And we'll write a method that creates text engine. So we'll just say public text engine make new engine, something like that. And what we'll do is return a new text engine. So we've now just got a method that returns text engines. What we want to do is export that. Now over on the import side, in the word processor, we can't just import a text engine like this anymore. So let's just remove that for the moment. And what we'll do is we'll import that function. So we'll say we want to import. And what we want to import is a function. So we'll just say that returns a text engine. Let's call this text engine creator function or something like that. Maybe that's the sort of thing to call it. And we'll just put a get and set on that to make it into a property. Then if we add a property to our word processor, let's say public text engine, the engine or something like that, then what we'll do is just get on that and we'll return what we get by invoking that function. So we're just going to return by calling that function. If we go back to our main code so that something asks the word processor for its text engine, let's just say engine equals word processor dot text engine, or the engine is what we called it. So if we set a breakpoint here, and we set a breakpoint perhaps here, and we set a breakpoint perhaps over here, what we should see is, as we run this code, that we've exported this function now from the text engine creator. So we click here. Here we are trying to get to that property. In getting to that property, we need to invoke that function. And there's the function that we're actually invoking. So notice that all we did to make this function available to the word processor was to import it here and to export it there. And MEF does the rest in terms of making those things line up. So let's simplify this back to where it was before. Let's take this whole class out and let's export our text engine again. Let's go back to our word processor and let's simply import the text engine again. So we're just going back to where we were previously, just simplifying things back. And we'll call this text engine like we did before. And we've got a very sort of concrete dependency between our word processor and the text engine. The word processor knows about the concrete type text engine. That's probably not what we'd want. Probably what we'd want is to go back to our text engine and refactor this out into an interface. So let's just extract an interface from that. iTextEngine. There's our interface for that. And that defines essentially what it means to be a text engine, you know, in terms of these properties and methods. If we go back to our text engine now, that implements iTextEngine. And so consequently, instead of exporting it as a text engine, we can export it as a type of iTextEngine. And then over in the word processor doesn't have to know about text engines, it just has to know about iTextEngine. And we break that dependency between the two. It still works like it did before. So if we go back with our breakpoint, press F5, and click on our button, then we should still see that the word processor, just get that to highlight, has a text engine. But now all it knows about that thing is that it's an iText engine as opposed to a full text engine. So we now reduce the dependency down to an interface as opposed to actually a concrete implementation. And MEF allows us to do that sort of exporting by interface name. Let's talk a little bit about when these things are created. If we go back to our word processor here, let's put a constructor on it. And let's put a breakpoint there and press F5. So our app words up and calls part initializer satisfy imports, and the word processor is created for us by MEF. You can see his system.componentmodel.composition doing work for us. It might be that we don't want this to happen until later. You know, we may not want this to happen right now. And so we can get to take simple control over that. If we go back to our main page SAML C# file, where it's currently importing a word processor, if we say that we want to import a lazy of word processor, then what will happen is that will not be constructed until we ask for it. And the way you ask for a value with one of these lazy types is we can say down in a piece of code here, let's say word processor WP equals word processor dot. And because it's a lazy of word processor, we can ask if the value is created, and we can also ask for the value. So let's just ask for the value. And what we'll see is the instantiation move. So if we press F5 now, as the application spins up and we call part initializer satisfy imports, we don't get the word processor instantiated. When we click our button and actually ask for the value of the word processor and step over this line in the debugger, you'll see there's our word processor being instantiated at a later point. So we've effectively deferred the creation of that word processor type, that instance, until a later point. On a related topic, that's where we just want one of these word processors, but what if we wanted to dynamically create more than one? So what if I wanted to say something like word processor WP1 equals new, you know, and the thing is, what do I do here? Because I can't just new up a word processor. I need MEF to create a word processor for me so that it gets a text engine and so on. But this method here only gives me one, and all methods we've seen so far would only ever let me have one. If I want to do that, there's another way of importing, which is to use a part creator of type word processor. Let's call this creator. And then what we can do is walk up to that and say word processor WP1 equals part creator, or sorry, creator we called it. Ask it to create a word processor for me. Now that actually returns another object, where what we can do is reach in and get its exported value, and we could create another one. And so on and so forth. Let's create three, something like that. So I actually created three separate instances. If we put a breakpoint here, just to stop on that line of code, what we're actually asking the framework to do is use its knowledge to dynamically create three of those word processors for us. There's one, there's two, there's three. And we don't actually know how to create those. We don't know how to get a word processor with a text engine. We don't know how that works. But MEF does, and by giving us this part creator here, it enables us to invoke that functionality. In a similar way, if we just back out this code again and revert back to just importing a word processor up here, what if we called this WP1 and we had another import to another property for WP2? And if we go over to our word processor class and just put a constructor onto that, let's add a constructor here, and put a breakpoint in there and press F5. The question is, does the framework create one or two word processors? So there we can see the constructor call, and that looks to be it. So it looks like it created one. And if we hit our breakpoint here, we should be able to look at WP1 as a property up here. Let's see if we can just get the debugger to show that. And if we use Visual Studio to make an object ID on that, then we should get an ID of one for that one. If we look at WP2, if we can just get Visual Studio to show that, you can see it's the same instance. So the framework has decided to only create one word processor instance and share them across these two imports. Now, if you didn't like that and you wanted to work a different way, what we can do on this export is we can specify a creation policy. So we have a part creation policy. And on that, we can specify what our creation policy is. So we'll say creation policy dot. And what we just had there was shared, share an instance across the imports. Or we can have non-shared. So if we specify non-shared and we rerun, what we should see is that we get the first word processor created and the second word processor created. And if we take a look in Visual Studio's debugger at this point, make an object ID for this guy. Let's just right mouse, make an object ID. So he is now word processor 1. And if we hover over this guy, we should see he is not word processor 1. I'm having trouble with my hovering. Let's go and right mouse on that and make an object ID. And hopefully we can see that he is object ID 2, got there in the end. So they are no longer the same instance. So we got different instances here, and we can control that. Now, as it happens, you can also import and control that on the import as well. So you can specify a required creation policy on the import as well if you want to. So that's another thing that you can do there. Let's back this back to where it was previously, where we just had word processor being imported here. And let's go back to our word processor and take away that creation policy and take away that constructor for the moment. Okay, great. Now, just thinking some more about this idea where you might have different numbers of things in flight, let's go back to our word processor. And the word processor says that it imports a text engine. What if, and we're not really talking about how MEF discovers these types in this video, but what if MEF couldn't find an export for a text engine? So we no longer have anything that's exporting a text engine. When we get that call to part initialize the satisfy imports, what we'll see if we set a breakpoint on that is MEF throwing an exception because it can't find something that matches the import that was required. Now, that might be right, you know, if the word processor absolutely has to have a text engine at this point in time, or it might not. You can be more flexible. So, for instance, we could say the word processor would like a text engine, but it doesn't matter if there isn't one around right now. So what we could say is that we allow default. And so if we allow default and rerun that, then what we'll see is that the word processor is no longer quite so strict, and we can satisfy imports. And if we run on, obviously, and click our button again, we're going to see a word processor. Okay, so if we just hover over this thing, we should be able to see that Word Processor currently doesn't have a text engine, even though we have gone through Satisfy Imports. And so the key thing there is that by specifying we allow default, then we're prepared to go through a composition without actually finding a text engine. So that's something that the framework's prepared for us to do. For the meantime, let's just go and take that back out. And then kind of flipping that on its head, what if we go back to our text engine and we export this text engine, but we copy it? Now, we're not really talking about how Meph discovers these types at this point, but if we just copy this type, let's have a fancy text engine, something like that. We'll call it fancy. So now in our exported types, we've got two iTextEngine exports. Now, it might be that we're actually trying to build a word processor that supports multiple text engines. So if we go back to our main page here, sorry, our word processor, then instead of importing iTextEngine, it might be importing something like iEnumerable of TextEngine. But if it's going to do that, let me just fix the namespaces, then the import attribute needs to be replaced with an import many attribute. So we're saying we're trying to find many text engines. You can also combine this with lazy of iTextEngine as well if you want to, but for the moment we won't do that. We'll just stick with this. So we're importing many text engines now, and if we go and just take a look at how that works, then as you'd expect, when we go ahead and click our button, our word processor, if you can just see it in the debugger, now has two text engines in this case, which you can go and enumerate, the text engine and the fancy engine. There's our default engine. There is our fancy engine. So we've very simply been able to import two text engines, or multiple text engines, into our word processor. But if you weren't trying to import multiple text engines, so if we go back to the situation where the word processor still has one text engine, how can you differentiate between sort of different offerings, different exports? So if we go back to the text engine, we've got these two exports. Now it happens that when exports are constructed, they actually have a sort of contract name associated with them, which is based usually on the type. That's what we're using here. So we're just using the type in order to construct it, but we can further differentiate that if we need to. So we could, for instance, call this one, I don't know, let's just say regular, something like that. And let's take this one and call it fancy, something like that. And so where now we can differentiate between the two, which otherwise look the same. So when we come to our import, we can say we are actually trying to use fancy there. So we're not trying to just use a regular text engine, we're trying to use fancy. If we go press F5, get back to our breakpoint, then we should be able to see that our word processor is using a text engine, which is, as you can see, the fancy text engine. So we've kind of differentiated, specialized, if you like, which one of these things that we're trying to look for. Now, taking that a step further, let's go back to our word processor and imagine that we want to import many text engines. So we'll go back to importing many, and we'll take the names off these two. So we're trying to export these two again. But we want some kind of decision process around being able to filter which text engines we actually want to import. What we can do, and it's just the first step really, is we can export metadata on this to build a dictionary of additional metadata. So we'll just add one piece of metadata that says is high res, and we'll say false on this guy, and we'll say true on this guy. So our fancy text engine is high res. Let's go back to the word processor and do an import many, and we want an iEnumerable of iTextEngine, and I guess we should call it TextEngines. Now, let's imagine we wanted to do something with only the high-res engine. So let's say public void process using high-res, you know, just as an example. And what we want to do is be able to get to the metadata to determine which of those things are high-res and which are not. We can use the lazy class for this again. So instead of having an iEnumerable of just iTextEngine, we could always have a lazy of iTextEngine. That's something we could have, and that would let us lazily instantiate that. But there's another version of this that allows us to have the metadata as well. So we can also have dictionary of string to object. So what we're asking for now is not just the access to the text engines, but also access to the metadata. So when somebody asks us to process this way, we could say for each, let's say, engine in text, text engines, what we need to now do is try and reach into that metadata. So we could say if engine.metadata.contains the key is high res, and let's say bool engine.metadata is high res, then this is a high res engine. So we can say engine.value.processText, you know, something like that. Just go and work with it that way. So if we then made a function call to this back in our main page, let's go and call wordprocessor.process using high res, then when we run that code, let's just click our button and run that code. See our breakpoint. So here we are using high res. Let's step into that. We're looking at each of the text engines asking, is there a metadata key high res? And is it set to true? On that engine, it's not. On this engine, it is. And notice we haven't instantiated the actual engine because it's a lazy instantiation until we get down to process the text here. Now, this is really slick. This is really neat. However, there's quite a lot of loose things here, you know, like these strings here are pretty loose, and this is pretty loose here. We're using a bool over here, and obviously everything has to kind of match up to what we typed in over here as magic values for strings. So we can actually do this in a better way, and what we can do is go and define our own exporting attributes. So if we go and just add a class over here, let's add a class. We'll call this text engine export, something like that. And so what we'll have is text engine export attribute, and we'll derive from export attribute. Let's just bring in the namespace for that. And what we need to do is attribute this up to say that this is a metadata attribute. And I suppose we should also really say attribute usage. We target a class with this thing, and we would not allow more than one. So we are an export attribute. Let's add a constructor here, and we need to call our base class, and we need to call it with the type that we are applied to. So we are type of iTextEngine. And then what we can do is add our custom properties. Well, we only have one. Our custom property is property, which is a Boolean, which is called isHighRes. That's our custom bit of metadata that we wanted to attach. Okay, so now when we go back to our export of our text engine, let's go back over here, and what we can say is we can use a text engine export, and we can say isHighRes on this equals false. And this guy down here, we can use a text engine export is high res equals true. So we've kind of made this a lot nicer on the exporting side. If we go back to the word processor where it consumes this, remember what we said about these strings? Well, we already wrote some brittle code because this code's already broken. We can fix it in one way. That's to change this to is high res to match the casing on the property that we defined, is high. I can't even type it correctly. And so with that in place, the code will go back to working again. So if we go run and click our button, take a look at what the function's doing. It's looking at the first engine and it's not high res. It's looking at the second engine and it is high res. But we can actually do better than this in terms of the way we consume. Instead of consuming a dictionary of string and object here as metadata, we can do something that's really quite clever and also strongly typed. So if we go and define ourselves an interface to consume that metadata. So let's just go to our code and add new interface. We'll call this iTextEngineMetadata, something like that. And we'll just make that not a class, but an interface. And all I'm going to put on there is a bool, a public bool, sorry, called isHighRes, and we'll just add a getter to it, because that's all we need. So iTextEngineMetadata. Now, interestingly, I'm not going to implement this anywhere, but Meph will do some magic around that. And if we go back to our wordprocessor.c#, and instead of doing this, what we can say is, let's not consume dictionary string to object here. Let's consume iTextEngineMetadata. Still a property called textEngines. So we're now consuming iTextEngineMetadata. And so consequently, instead of working this way, we can ask isHighRes. Let's press F5. Oh, we had an interface with a public on it. My mistake. There we go. And if we get back to our button again, click on that, step into our code, we look at the first engine, it's not high res. We look at the second engine, it is high res. How neat is that? That's really quite slick. So hopefully that isn't sort of too involved. You get this idea that when we are exporting and importing, we've got a lot of flexibility around taking an exported type like our text engine over here. Where's it gone? We've lost our text engine. Let's just find that guy. Where we're doing these exports, we did start off by just exporting by type, and then we added a name so we could differentiate, and then we've added arbitrary metadata and made it strongly typed around those exports as well. So there's a lots of flexibility here around how you make this stuff work. Okay, so this video is getting long. Let's close it down. And what we've tried to do here is walk around quite a bit around importing and exporting and how those attributes work and what behavior they drive. What we'll try and do is come back in another video and talk about how Meph actually finds the types that it's working with. We'll look at things like catalogs and how it works out what types you've got in play in order to discover these things in the first place.